Welcome, everybody, finally, to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, as always. Joining me is Filippo D'Analfo and Chris Elogi. Say hello. Hi, guys.
Hello.
This episode is going to be for October 14th, 2016. So you're probably wondering what took us so long.
we tried to do two shows. Tried being the operative word.
Yeah. So basically, to make a long story short, the line that my modem was connected to had gone bad, which makes sense considering it's one of those what do they call them? Homestar connections or whatever.
Yeah. DSL
ones. Yeah. Hmm. And which, I mean, makes sense because it was a couple years old, so.
Yeah.
Originally we thought it was just the router itself, but we got the router replaced and still had the problem, so we just replaced the line, and now everything's hunky-dory.
Yeah.
So, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
We know you guys are probably expecting us to talk about some things, specifically the presidential debates, quote-unquote. We're actually planning on waiting to do all of those together next Friday, since, for one thing, Pat and Teresa aren't with us, as you probably noticed. And considering the fact, other than certain scandals that have come up, there isn't really a whole lot of substance to them.
Hmm.
So we decided we're just going to sort of do them all together at once. And that's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And, to get us started, Phil, what have you been up to?
So I've been reading the Rhaera Chronicles, Michael J. Sullivan's really nice, fantasy-type stories about a young knight and a very, very, very disturbed in the head thief. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. People who upset him tend to meet with very, very bad ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't know, being staked out to a statue and then being eviscerated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's just the regular bundle of sunshine.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So yeah, don't mess with Royce. He's not good. Anyway, so that's been a very enjoyable couple of books so far. There's four in that Chronicles, and there are two other omnibus editions. So I'll probably be going through.
Is this the who is this? Who published this?
Yeah, this is by Michael J. Sullivan.
Oh, I know who the writer is. I mean, the company.
This is Orbit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't know this, but Michael Sullivan originally self-published the first couple books of this series.
Yeah, I think actually self-published all of them, because he's kind of a weird writer in that he writes the entire story and then publishes it. Hmm. So, yeah. So, he had published those originally, self-published them, and then got signed on with Orbit and released them as two big-ass books. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. So apart from that, I've also been messing around with Android set-top boxes because I want to have something, you know, small and quiet that'll run Kodi and Netflix and a web browser that, you know, is not really super noisy and is easy enough to use for my mom and my sister.
Nice.
Since being that I'm the tech guy of the house, well, I kind of have to figure all this stuff out, so... So I'm getting that going. Ended up buying two of them. One of them has a bad power supply. Yay, China. Yeah, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be continuing to investigate those and hopefully get something working. Got to return one to Amazon, and at least Amazon's customer service is really good, so I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And other than that, well, I'm embarking down the journey of improving myself. So, going to be...
You're not joining some cult or something, are you?
Well, no. I hope not, anyway. I'm decided that I'm going to be learning Python. I'm going to be, getting my IT certifications, and I'm going to be going back to work. So that's my plans. So it's exciting times for me. And a lot of work.
Oh yeah.
So and that's the decisions that I've come to this week. How about you guys?
All right, what about you, Chris?
So I've been watching more of The Flash, season 2 on Netflix. And
nice.
Yeah, they've gone to some interesting places. So the way season 1 ended is they create a giant not black hole, like a just a big I don't know.
Time vortex.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. And and they managed to stop that, save the world, or whatever's left of it, of the city. Mm. And so they're trying to move on a bit, and they end up finding out that there is an Earth 2, and somehow have the ability that the whole time vortex thing opened up some sort of way of getting between the two worlds, or the two universes in the version of Earth 2, as they sort of introduce this idea of the multiverse. Yeah. That I'm not sure if that's the first instance of it with all this Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff. Or the Flash is DC, right?
Yeah.
Well, Earth 2 has been around in DC lore at least since the Golden Age. So
yeah, but I'm thinking about like the current
multiverse. Yeah, it might be universe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's because you meet the alternate Flash with the cool little helmet.
Yeah.
And all that, but unfortunately in his trip over, he loses his speed.
Mm.
So he ends up being sort of the training figure for the Flash in Earth 1, sort of as more of these villains from Earth 2 sort of come over. As you find out, the big baddie Zoom is the one that's dropping these guys off on Earth 1, saying if they want to go back home, they have to kill the Flash. And that's sort of been the whole crux, like, oh, which villain has been dropped off this week? And what does the Flash have to do to save the day? That sort of thing. I think I'm at the point where they're going to start bringing in Zoom more than it was before, which is I'm looking forward to seeing that. They end up bringing back who is it? I'm looking it up. Yeah, Dr. Harrison Wells, his Earth 2 version comes over, and obviously the rest of the team being traumatized by him and the Reverse Flash, everything they did at the end of the first season, they find it really hard to trust him. Even though he has some of the same traits, so there's people they're the same people on both worlds. They just have different roles.
Yeah.
So they find out one villain has come to their world, but catches Earth 1 version, who is just a normal guy.
Yeah.
And sort of find out, oh, this one's not a mutant. Or whatever they call them, metahumans, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's like, but then the other version shows up and starts wreaking havoc and all that stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Mm. They just start getting really weird. Mm. But yeah, it's cool so far. Still the same kind of humor and all that. And yeah, I'm looking forward to watching some more of that.
Yeah.
As for other things, I'm still playing Trails in the Sky.
Mm-hmm.
I am still in Rouen. I think I'm nearing the end, as they've just busted open the whole big mystery behind the whole town involving the orphanage burning down.
Okay.
And then the mysterious group that has mugged the matron and stolen the 100,000 whatever dollars.
Yeah. Have you met the queen yet?
No.
All right, you still got a little ways to go.
The point where I was at, they were confronting the mayor.
Ah.
Then he throws out
his monsters. Yeah, well, then at that point, you're actually at the halfway point then.
Okay.
Yeah, you still got a little ways to go.
Yeah, so still enjoying the RPG stuff, and story stuff just kind of keeps going. It's kind of leaning pretty heavily on the sort of visual novel part of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As I just got through the whole festival, which was a pretty cool thing. Though it's kind of weird that by the end of that play, it's all propaganda.
Yep.
Like, oh, long live the queen and the royal family. Don't live for the regular people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still good fun. I look forward to playing some more of it. I still want to just buy more better gear. I got money and nothing to spend it on.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, maybe I'll reload up on my ingredients to make more food.
Yeah.
Other than that, not much going on. Mm. Yeah, still enjoying that a lot. And I've been dipping my toes into PlayStation VR.
So you actually got your headset.
Yeah, I got it at 7:40 p.m. I got it 8 p.m. by Amazon. It's like, it'll be here by 8 p.m.
7:40, here it is. Okay.
And the guy's like, oh, man, you're the last one on the round. I was like, well, that's great. That doesn't help anything. It's literally dark out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I managed to play about an hour of it. And, I was recording. The setup is actually really really easy. And if you've put together any, like, bigger Lego sets, it has that same style of big manual, the color house manual. She's like, here's step one. Grab the bag mark number one. Take this cable, plug it in, and plug it into PS4 and plug it into this. That sort of stuff. The processor unit, it has a cool little, like, cocking section. Sort of like the pump on a shotgun. You just pull this part back, plug these two things in, pull it back, and it sort of locks them in. It's like really cool design. And they actually smartly use the PlayStation buttons, icons, for some of these cables. So like, oh, here's a triangle and circle. Plug it into the other, to the input that says triangle circle on it. The other one's square and X. And it makes it real nice instead of...
Yeah. Plug the yellow cable into the slot mark one and all that fun stuff.
Or any sort of weird terms. It's pretty easy to set up. Basically, if I just want to take the headset off, I just unplug it from the cable. I can put it somewhere. If I want to, say if I had an HDR TV and I wanted to use it, I just unplug the HDMI cable from the power unit, plug it into the PS4. That's all there is, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
While I was messing around with the some games and such for the first hour, I did capture on it just to see what happened.
Yeah.
So whenever you're in the cinematic mode, sort of looking at anything that's just regular 2D, non-VR, it just shows like I wasn't capturing it through VR at all.
Yeah, it just shows with like 2D.
Yeah, so that's just what the social screen shows on the TV. I turned up the size of that screen to 224 inches.
Yeah.
So whenever I take off the headset, it's like, whoa, my TV's tiny now. So now it's kind of making me think I need a bigger TV.
Well, you got the headset, so at least there's that.
Yeah. Hmm. The tracking's pretty good. I know that's been one of the bigger issues people have had.
Hmm.
So far, I haven't had much in the way of problems with it. The controller, it has a little bit of problem just holding it. Like, I'm holding it straight, and it'll move a little bit forward or back. Things like that, but I'm not really looking at it while I'm playing, so it's not really a big deal.
Yeah.
I played some of the VR video apps, and they're all bad. They just do a 360 video.
Yeah.
And two of the apps, all the videos are just low res as hell.
Mm. Have you tried the PS4 media player update that has PS4?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
That works well.
Mm.
I don't have any specific VR apps, but you can just turn it on any video.
Yeah.
And it just wraps around you.
Yeah. You can also apparently use it on the Xbox One or Wii U for somehow. I don't know how, but apparently you plug it in and it still displays.
I guess you could just plug in that into the power unit.
Hmm.
The processor unit.
Yeah.
That would be the feed it would use.
Hmm. Yeah, because I saw Digital Foundry were doing it, so I imagine.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah, I turned it on a video, like a Giant Bomb Quick Look, when they were on like just the PS4 menu. Just all of a sudden, the PS4 dashboard just wraps around me. And it's not end-to-end, so there's like a little bit cut off on the one end, which was weird. So far, so good. I played 100-foot robot golf, which is just... allows it to be even sillier than it is already.
Yeah.
That one's just sort of a third-person view as you're sort of controlling your robot and doing stuff. Mm. The weird thing I had with that is it has animated cutscenes, and it definitely takes after like 80s anime where there's as little animation as possible. Probably because they don't have as many animators as normal animation studio would.
Yeah.
So generally, I try to have just like a mouth move as the entire moving thing. But the first cutscene I saw while I was playing in VR was one where they actually trying to walk. So the background is moving, but it's stuttering the whole time.
Yeah, that might make you nauseous.
It didn't really make me nauseous because it's not the whole thing I'm seeing.
No.
So it kind of looks like the cinematic mode, so it's like this screen, then there's like space all around it.
Okay.
So I was able to look at other stuff and not necessarily have to focus on that. But I sent a message to Dan Teasdale about it, and he said, "Yeah, we're working on it." So it was just a weird thing to see. It's like, okay, the one point you tried to do something a little bit more ambitious, it just falls apart.
Yeah.
So I also played Volume Coda, which is their VR update, which is pretty cool. It's basically just a method of playing like a tabletop version of Volume.
Yeah, just you see things overhead instead of overhead.
Yeah, you can use the D-pad to change the angle of the level.
Yeah.
So if you want to have it just top down or just angle it at a side or something, or you can zoom in, zoom out. I just had it as close as possible. That worked. It works pretty well. What else have I played?
Hope you played Resident Evil.
Not yet. I was playing Hatsune Miku. I was trying to record a video, but apparently my game audio got messed up. So barely recorded any game audio.
Joy.
But I got the solo performance, and that was weird.
Thanks, Japan.
And you get to pick the outfit. It's like, oh, we're going to do a special performance for you. What outfit do you want me to wear? It's like, what? That's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Another weird thing about the VR is trophies will pop, but there's no visual notification. You just hear the noise.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to pop out to the dashboard to see what happened.
Yeah.
But when you, the automatic screenshot it takes, that still takes that VR with the trophy notification on top of it. That's like a weird thing. It's able to transpose that on top of it.
Hmm.
Yeah, so far so good. Nothing's really made me nauseous. Maybe that low res video.
Yeah.
Like, if there's any part where you can see, like, the screen door effect, it's on the video.
Yeah.
Because that's just all static.
Hmm.
I was watching a SNL 40 skit, Jeopardy. And which was cool because you could see, like, the cue card guys doing their thing. Like, oh, there's two different guys, two different sets of guys. One that's doing it for Will Ferrell and one for the contestants.
Yeah.
And you could see them, see how they move in and out of the space because they're swapping guys out. So they can have Sean Connery on there and Justin Bieber and a couple other guys. But yeah, when I was, you're sitting like right above the, one of the cameras, that's where their 360 camera was at. And I look at Will Ferrell, and it's just a mess of pixels. Because it's so low res. The only thing I could make out is the dark pixels of the mustache. So it was like, well, this, I'm just listening to this now because there's not much visually I could go on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could look at the crowd, and since this was like a special, seemed like a special episode they were doing, so everybody was in tuxedos and dresses. You could see some of the extra screens and such and see how much of the crew just hovers around this one space of this skit. There's like a ton of people just watching it. And this particular set was off to the left of where the crowd was, so they're all looking to the left, which was interesting. I didn't really think about where those different stages were at in relation to the crowd. So you saw people that were, like, looking over, sort of maybe turning their bodies a little bit or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And you could look in the back and see, like, oh, there's the monologue stage. There's some other stuff in the back. It's all that sort of cool stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was solo res. It wasn't much more value out of it than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty good so far, and yeah, I was going to make a joke that real reality is getting so terrible, I got to find my own reality to hide in. That's in a Hatsune Miku crowd. That game is more of a rhythm game than you actually think it would be. Because you actually have, you get like a, I was using the DualShock 4, and they put like a glow wand out of that. And so occasionally you have to like bob it to the beat. And so you look at the crowd, the other people in the crowd, see how they're doing it, and you sort of time it with them. And there was one point where I actually just went into rhythm game mode. Where I actually had to like flick the stick in time with as the stars sort of flew onto the screen, which was crazy. Like, wait a minute, I'm just playing Hatsune Miku in the middle of this concert. It's all crazy. And there's points where they ask you to yell or talk or whatever. And I think you have to do that to get the encore or special one-on-one session. So I was just yelling Freebird.
Of course.
Everybody's yelling Japanese, like, Freebird, Freebird, Freebird. So yeah, just still have fun with that. My wand mutated during the whole concert. It muted from one glow wand into like three, like I was Wolverine. And then I had a maraca by the last song, end of the last song. So when I had the one-on-one session with Hatsune Miku, I got up close and was trying to hit her with it.
That worked.
It didn't really do anything, but it was fun to try.
Yeah,
so that's some of the fun that VR offers. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I've been gaming because I had to do something to fill in the gaps between the disconnects. primarily, I've been playing Fire Emblem Fates.
Yeah.
I started a new playthrough of that because it had been a while since I had gotten to the last time I played, so I decided I might as well just start over from scratch. Hmm. It's Fire Emblem. What do you expect?
Yeah.
It's good. And I've also been playing Guilty Gear Xrd Sign.
Yeah.
So, that as well. Thing is, it's late.
That's good.
I think I said last time on the Day Zero update, I don't have Revelator yet because financial reasons.
Yeah.
So I decided to just go over to GameStop and get the switch over to the PS4 version of Sign.
Yeah.
And so I got that. A lot of fun. And that story mode is always a treat to watch.
Yeah.
These
aren't dubbed, by the way, are they?
Yeah.
Oh, they're actually dubbed. Cool.
Yeah, full English.
Hmm.
All of it.
No, 100%.
Yeah. It ends on one hell of a cliffhanger, though.
Yeah.
But it's good. And you get to see one or two characters that you hadn't seen in a while make a return.
Yeah.
And
soundtrack is awesome.
Yeah, and the soundtrack is awesome. And you also get a little bit of further information on who Justice is.
Yeah.
Yes, and even get further find out who that man is.
Hmm.
And also a lot about Soul Bad Guy's past.
Yeah.
And how they're all connected.
Hmm.
Also, Bedman may be one of the greatest characters ever created for any fighting game ever. So Guilty Gear games already are known for having these really just bizarre cast of characters.
Yeah.
Bedman is basically like a 14-year-old kid who is apparently comatose and has been nailed to this giant mechanical bed with like robot limbs and stuff on it.
Yeah.
Like that. Do you remember that movie? It was an Otomo movie. I think it was called Rogen Z or something like that. It's kind of like that. The dude really, really reminds me of something. Like he stepped straight out of Persona. Like he has like this whole sort of Freddy Krueger side to him.
Yeah.
And, his ultimate attack basically revolves around dragging the opponent into a nightmare theater and basically showing them their greatest fear until it defeats them. That game's still a lot of fun. Eventually I'll be able to get enough, points so I can get I can unlock Sin Kiss, which is Kai Kiss' son.
Yeah.
He's pretty much the one character in the game that's locked behind that, and you don't have to go online to purchase it or anything. You just have to play enough to get enough points to unlock him.
Yeah.
It's the same deal like when, in the old Guilty Gear games, you went into the gallery section and unlocked, artwork and music and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, some of those arenas are again, Guilty Gear, much like its cast of characters, is also known for having these series of arenas that are absolute fucking bullshit with just weirdness that makes very little sense.
Yeah.
This one especially. There's this one stage called the Opera House, which I don't really know what its purpose is or how to. It's basically a giant opera house with a sort of clock face on the floor, and then there's up there is a on a giant throne is this Satan looking figure who's apparently chained to it, and every so often you'll see these people on these chairs being rolled down the staircase with like this big block with like a digital number on their heads, and then I guess he's like judging them and taking them to the afterlife or something. I'm not really sure. It doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah. It's like, you know, an amalgamation of metal covers just formed into fighting game arenas.
Yeah, basically. So, there's been that. Last week, I watched the very first, the premiere episode of Westworld. And if you have not been watching Westworld, you need to watch it. It is damn good.
Yeah.
Have any of you guys ever seen the original movie?
I saw the original one with Yul Brynner. Yeah, it was cheesy.
Yeah, it's cheesy. Here, they play it absolutely straight, and it works.
Yeah.
It's sort of the kind of basic sort of same idea. It basically takes place in a giant adult theme park based around the Wild West.
Yeah.
With all these artificial intelligence characters inside of it, and basically rich assholes pay a lot of money to go in there and just act out their Wild West fantasy. And when I say act out their Wild West fantasy, I mean literally all the worst shit you can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, sure, yeah, they can go in and, you know, they can play the sheriff and, you know, have a big shootout at high noon, or you can play the bad guy and shoot the sheriff and rape his wife.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It is really good. It also helps that, you know what? I'm not even going to say anymore. Just, you need to see it.
Yeah.
It's going to be on H. They're replaying it on HBO every couple of days. So, you know, just TiVo it if you have to.
yeah. Or subscribe to HBO Now. It's and that, you can get it.
Yeah. It's really that good. Mm-hmm. And, some of it's a real mindfuck, too.
Yeah, and they're just getting started.
Yeah. And yeah. It does have all the violence and nudity and sex that Game of Thrones has, only with the exception that in this time it actually makes sense and is congruent to the actual story.
Yeah. There's also not, like, 4 million characters to follow in this particular story, so that makes it a lot easier to get into.
Mm-hmm. So, other than that, let's see. Oh, I've also been listening to more J-Rock. Specifically, I've really been getting into this band called The Biz. Pat might know about The Biz, because The Biz is, like, the biggest-selling rock band that ever came out of Japan, period. They were the first rock band to actually headline, Japanese rock band to headline at Madison Square Garden. Like, they're that big. And it's two dudes. It's guitarist Tech Matsumoto and singer Koshi Inaba. And they've been around since the mid-80s. And they didn't really become, like, ultra-popular until around 1990.
Yeah.
Before that, like, their first couple of albums were, like, really synth-heavy.
Yeah.
Lots of synthesizers and drum machines going along with awesome guitar.
Hmm.
You know, just basically think of every, like, late 80s, early 90s anime theme song. It sounds like that.
Okay.
But around 1990, they switched to a more sort of hard rock sound with a more sort of, like, Aerosmith inspiration.
Yeah.
And then they just took off. It's good shit. if you ever get a chance. You won't be able to find it on YouTube because their record label has basically prevented pretty much every non-Japanese from being able to see their videos on YouTube. So, pretty sure you can go on like Hulu or something, yeah, or Vevo.
Yeah, or Spotify. Pretty sure. Yeah. Pretty sure I was listening to them on there. So.
Yeah.
And
so,
I think they also come up on Pandora every now and then.
Mm-hmm. And so I've been doing that. Oh, and I went back into my old box of comic books, which I collected a lot of dust, stuff I had started collecting when I was still in high school. And I have started rereading from the first issue, Choji Manabe's Outlanders manga. Have any of you guys ever read this?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this.
Nope. Holy shit. This was, if you were a manga fan in the 90s in America, you fucking read this thing. It was, let me give you a sort of an idea. Okay, Joji Manabe, who for the record is still around and still publishing, he started doing stuff in the 80s and became successful around 1989-1990. If I were to describe his art style, he has the sort of, the attention to sort of technological and mechanical detail that, you know, someone like Leiji Matsumoto, Captain Harlock, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And when he actually draws actual characters, they're kind of a more muscular version of, not muscular, more masculine kind of Rumiko Takahashi look. And basically, Outlanders is this huge space opera, like Star Wars tier shit.
Yeah.
Basically about this dude who's a photojournalist in Japan who happens to be, doing something in New York when aliens invade. Because that's how this shit tends to happen. And he ends up meeting the princess of these aliens, who is, let me just sort of give you an idea of what we're looking at here. Let me show you. Yeah, this will do right here. Put it right here in the section. There we go. Yeah, that's her on the cover.
Okay.
Yeah. She wears basically nothing but a chainmail bikini, carries around a large sword, and has horns on her head.
And 80s hair.
Very
and 80s hair. Well, late 80s, early 90s hair, because in Japan, the 80s lasted another couple years.
Yeah.
But you can see the Takahashi influence by the way he draws faces.
Yeah.
Basically, they meet up. Earth more or less gets bulldozed over. There's like a big thing, like resistance movement. A bunch of characters die. There's a heartwarming love story in there. They run into a couple of people in the Earth Resistance. It's one of those things you kind of have to read it for yourself. It's amazing. I mean, I was fucking obsessed with this series back when I was in high school, and I got every issue I could get my hands on. And it really is a great story. I mean, it is one of those manga where on the surface it looks like a fun, space romp adventure story, and it is, but it also has these really dark moments where it tugs at the heartstrings. It really does.
Yeah.
And you get really attached to all these characters. You know, there's action, there's drama, there's comedy, and the comedy is especially good. Oji Manabe is still around. He mostly draws hentai now. But for the record, he never really stopped doing that. I mean, like a lot of, you know, manga artists that came out in the 80s, he got his start in the doujinshi market. So that's kind of his bread and butter, you know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I've read quite a bit of his hentai, and the thing is, yeah, all of what you're thinking about is there, but his ability at you know, character development and storytelling has not gone away.
Mm.
It may be porn, but it is porn with very compelling plot.
Yeah.
And he also, the other thing I do like is that the way he draws, he doesn't stick to, like, one particular body type with his characters.
No.
You know, his female characters are everything from, you know, skinny to stocky and muscular and dark-skinned and light-skinned and all that stuff.
Hmm.
So it's good stuff. That is pretty much what I've been up to. Anybody got anything else they want to add?
Well, I wanted to ask, was there ever an anime made of that?
There was an OVA made of it.
Hmm. Okay, I'll try to track that down.
It's so. So.
Yeah. Because
well, there was only one OVA, one episode, so.
Oh, well.
It's good, but it's...
Yeah, you can't you really know, cram your... all of the content into one episode. It's not gonna
no.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, With that said, I guess, yeah, it's time once again for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, this probably would have been a lot more relevant last week, you know, if my connection hadn't decided to, you know, crap yeah. out on me.
Yeah.
But, fuck it. I'm still keeping it. So, last week... around, let's see, I think it was the 4th, yeah. October 4th was the 80th anniversary of a little event that went down in pre-World War II England called the Battle of Cable Street. Now, I'm not sure if I've actually talked about this particular event before in a previous random factoid, but fuck it, I'm going to do it again because it bears repeating.
Don't think you have, actually. I think you might have touched on it, but no, okay. never given it a full episode.
Okay. So, it's the late 1930s in England. At the time, Benito Mussolini had been in power in Italy for a good part of a decade. And Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party had recently taken some power, had a couple of years previous taken power in Germany. So, you know, fascism was on the march in Europe. And out of all this, in England comes this one particular asshole by the name of Oswald Mosley. Mosley was a spoiled aristocratic douchebag who originally started off in politics as a member of the Conservative Party. For the record, he had served a little in World War I, but since he was an aristocrat, he didn't really do anything major. So he went there, he served the Conservative Party, and then for some weird reason, he, for his sort of idealistic hope of wanting to end all wars, he crossed the aisle and went over to the right wing of the Labor Party. And then, right around that time, he went on a trip. And he went on a little trip to previously mentioned Italy and Germany. And when he came back to England, he decided, hey, that just sounds hunky-dory. Let's do that shit here. So, he managed to put together an organization with a bunch of other fellow other various arch reactionary and various other fascist and fascist sympathetic organizations in England, and formed the organization that would become known as the British Union of Fascists. And this group became infamous for holding these big military-style demonstrations, which would usually be followed with, you know, anti-Semitic riots. And in, on, let's see, what year was it? 1936, Oswald Mosley planned to have his British Union of Fascists march through the East End of London, which at the time had the highest Jewish population in the city. You can kind of guess and see where this is going, can't you? So what did they do? What happened? Now, at this point, it should be pointed out, the British Union of Fascists did not go through all this shit beforehand without any opposition. They had had opposition from the Labor Party, the Communist Party, and various anti-fascist groups within England. And when it was announced that he was planning on, you know, marching through this particular part of London, which again had the largest Jewish population in the city at the time, they decided, you know what, we need to call everyone in, we need to get the people of the East End to rise up and prevent these assholes from marching. So what did they do? They gathered together every sympathetic member of the Communist Party, of the Labor Party, of the Communist Youth League, various anarchists and libertarian socialists, trade unionists, Irish nationalists, basically every anti-fascist left-wing sympathizer that they could get in London to show up on Cable Street. And they built up a barricade made up of, you know, chairs and desks and literally whatever they could find right in the middle of the street. And as, you know, Mosley and his fascists were coming through, pretty much every other person in the East End started pelting them with eggs and vegetables and garbage, and, you know, people started running in and smacking them over the heads.
I'm guessing this escalated, you know, pretty quickly.
Oh, it escalated pretty quickly. And the police are kind of part of the problem. because, you know, technically this was a march that was, you know, authorized by, you know, the City of London. You know, they, because it was considered a free speech issue, and therefore they should have the right to march. Of course, again, we're talking about a group of literally British Nazis.
Yeah.
Who had attacked and harassed and injured various Jewish and other groups in the past.
Yeah.
So this time the East End people said, you know, we're not going to let them. You know, we know what follows this shit. We're not going to let it happen. And, you know, if for the record, in the show notes, we've got linked a video that links to a video on YouTube where they actually talked to some of the people who took part in the Battle of Cable Street. And, you know, they tell you literally their own personal experience. And it's things from, like, how they, like, one group managed to chase a bunch of police into a cellar, and they tried to hide away in the cellar, and after banging on the cellar doors for a while, they actually got all of the constables that were in there to lay down their batons and surrender. And then once they got out, he said, "All right, you guys, sawed off." And that's the other thing about this, is all these guys are just really nonchalant about it. Because they're English, of course they are.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, it was jolly good fun, you know. You know, kicking around a few of Mosley's boys, I tell you what. You know, and so ultimately this particular event would show that it would essentially be the first sign of the downfall of the British Union of Fascists. And, of course, as everybody knows, exactly about 1 or 2 years later, you know, some of there's very fascist individuals from outside of England would then attempt to bomb the city of London into a crater.
Hmm.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Battle of Cable Street. And it gives you a lesson on what you do when you're confronted with a bunch of Nazis.
Hmm.
You don't let the fuck. You stand up to them. You don't let the fuckers march.
Hmm.
You know? I recommend, you know, lead pipes, baseball bats, knuckle dusters. They get the job done.
Yeah.
I'm not recommending killing anybody, but I have no problem bashing one of these pricks in their kneecaps.
Yeah.
Because fuck them. They're Nazis.
Hmm. Taser drums.
Taser drums.
Yeah.
Also really fun to troll them on Facebook. That's just a lot of fun.
Hmm.
Because they're so easy to troll. They get triggered by just the littlest thing.
Yeah.
For example, a little while back, you remember that little guy back when, you know, Milo, what's his name, decided to have that little interview with, what was it, NBC or CBS or whatever?
Yeah, yes.
So I went on that particular YouTube video and I left a comment where, you know, I said exactly what is truth. Milo is an asshole, and all of his followers are assholes, and I hope you all fucking murder yourselves. And I had one dude call me, you know, comment and said, you know, he had I think it was like a 34 Magnum as his avatar.
Yeah.
And he says, "You see this gun in my avatar? This is what I use when I come across people who disagree with Milo." I was like, "Is that supposed to scare me?" And then I, you know, flagged the comment and banned him.
Yeah.
But and blocked him. Because that's the other fun thing is when you cut off their ability to to troll you. Oh, they fucking hate that.
Yeah.
You know, both of my grandfathers, on my mom and my dad's side, they fought the fascists in World War II, you know? My great-granddad Smith, you know, he and his unit, he got a bunch of Nazi assholes charging at him, bayonets, and they still managed to take out three of the fuckers. Do you think a little comment with that cute little gun of yours is going to scare me?
Nope.
No. You can have your cute little rallies and your cute little newspapers. You don't fucking scare me, you Hitler-loving pieces of shit.
Hmm.
And that has been another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
And then some.
And then some. Remember, folks, never, ever just ignore fascists. They are bullies, and talking to them never works.
Hmm.
Bullies only understand one thing. And you know what that one thing is. Now, moving on from that, we got to go ahead and talk about our assholes of the week. And this one in particular kind of hits close to home. Well, you can tell why. because this happened in my home state.
Yeah.
Racist Georgia cops were fired for Facebook posts targeting black drivers. Show no remorse. Two white officers for the McIntosh County Sheriff's Department in Georgia lost their jobs after an internal affairs investigation revealed a series of racist and sexist messages exchanged between the two men on Facebook, including one message that seemed to suggest that the officers discriminated against African Americans whilst on duty. Both officers served in the department's special traffic unit, which is designated to patrolling I-95 in South Georgia. The former officers in question, Brant Guider and Jeremy Owens, exchanged messages using highly offensive and derogatory terms to refer to African Americans. According to records obtained by the Atlantic Journal-Constitution, the officers referred to African America as, quote, "niggs and colored people." One message featured an image of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., under which was the caption, "I have a dream that one day my people will not act like animals," which Jeremy Owens then responded, "lol, that'll never happen."
So they publicly made, you know, racist Facebook posts and then got fired for it, and they have no remorse. Yeah, they're assholes. That definitely qualifies.
And stupid ones at that.
Yep.
Yeah. According to Sheriff Stephen D. Jessup, the racist posts were uncovered in July when another deputy was issued Owens' old computer, which still contained access to his Facebook account. Sheriff Jessup described the post as deeply disturbing and made him, quote, "want to throw up." Quoted, "there was never any question of what I needed to do," Jessup said, "and I did it. I do not tolerate that in my department."
Yeah.
Sheriff Jessup himself stated that he does not discriminate against anyone in the community and has never had any reason to suspect that his department singled out black motorists. Oh, this is going to get good. Records show that Guider was terminated on July 25th for being in violation of the department's policies regarding immoral conduct and behavior on becoming of a deputy. Owens left the department last December, but reportedly resigned his position a day after Guider was terminated. Upon learning that Jessup was firing him, Guider whined, quote, "it was a joke. We all do it."
No, we don't.
That's something I've noticed with all races, is that they all think that racism is the default for everyone.
Yeah, they want to blame everybody else but them.
Yeah.
It's very clear kind of self-projection, you know?
Yeah.
That it says here at the end, "it should also be noted that while Sheriff Jessup seems appalled by the behavior of his two former deputies, he's also up for re-election, facing a challenge from former Sheriff Charles Jones, who is an African American, who he unseated in 2008. So, it's also possible there's an ulterior motive here as well.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, we here down here in America, and to a smaller extent in Canada, we've been having our sort of problems with police brutality and police misconduct and all this stuff. And the one thing I could say up to this point was, well, at least my home state hasn't become the one of the targets of this. Can't say that anymore.
Nope.
And to be honest, I'm kind of surprised it didn't happen sooner.
Well, they are looking for other work now.
Yeah. I've said before that the state of Georgia is mostly African American, and yet all of our leaders are mostly old white men.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, there was now, some news about the Justice Department. It's going to be collecting data on police shootings.
Yeah.
Both criminals and civilians.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see something coming out of that.
Hopefully. Cross fingers.
Yeah.
So, moving on from that to get that bad taste of our mouth, let's go on to something a little happier. Our hero of the week. Ice cream! Specifically, Ben and Jerry's ice cream. We all love Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Yep.
They make wacky ideas and put them in ice cream form.
Yeah.
Yes, very, very painful puns. Gums that are stretched so thin, well, you could pretty much stretch them like silly putty over your knee. But Ben and Jerry's, specifically the two guys who founded it, Ben and Jerry themselves, announced their public support for Black Lives Matter. So good on them. I guess, and Chris, was this what you posted?
Yep.
All right, so give us some...
Well, you rarely ever see brands take political stances on anything. Especially this being sort of an ice cream brand. They don't really have any reason
to
take a stance.
Well, yeah, but you have to remember this is Ben and Jerry's. It was founded by two old hippies.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to make a, if any company is going to make any kind of political stand, it's going to be them.
Yeah. Usually the only way we see companies making any sort of political statement is because somebody else has already mentioned their product in their stupid rant. They're like, yeah, fuck you. We don't associate with any political stuff.
Right.
Don't confuse our Skittles with human lives. Stupid shit like that. So these guys posted a big blog post sort of explaining why they are taking a stand. And it's a pretty good post. And if you just look at their blog in general, they have a lot of interesting information about the election, things like that. And the one thing in the time since this was announced, you can probably take a guess at who was not happy about this news.
Donald Trump?
No, police group.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Calling for a boycott.
Let me guess. Was it the Fraternal Order of Police?
I don't remember.
It was a police union, wasn't it?
Yeah, some sort of police group. And I was immediately thinking, well, it's a good thing it wasn't Dunkin' Donuts making this, because like, that would have been a real conundrum. Let's see.
Rimshot.
Pro-police group. Just Blue Lives Matter.
Yeah.
That group.
Those guys.
Accused the ice cream company of leading a dangerous campaign. Yeah, those dangerous hippies making their ice cream with puns on it.
Yeah.
And what was fun is on the Twitter thing for this, I'm trying to see if I can pull it up. They made the statements, and then people started posting their own ideas for punny names in support of this. It was like a Milky Rocky Road, Shea Butter Pecan, Rocky Road to Equality, Empowerment, Go Shouty, It's Sherbert Day.
Oh.
He was unarmed, though. Fudge the police. By any creep.
Okay, that last one I'm okay with.
New cone, who dis? Don't touch my afro, though. I have a cream. A raisin in sundae. Rhythm and blueberry. That's all the ones they have on this little thing, but yeah, it's cool to see any brand sort of taking stands for one of these issues.
Yeah,
it's not just, hey, stop fucking using our brands for hateful shit.
Yeah.
All right, so awesome. So if you are like us at Smashpad, who are wholehearted supporters of Black Lives Matter, and you decide that you want to help support the cause, go out and buy a nice cart of delicious Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Ben and Jerry, by the off chance that you're listening, we want you to sponsor us. We would be happy.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, just as a side note, the Fraternal Order of Police, the largest police union in the United States, officially endorsed Donald Trump.
So, yep. So an order with an acronym of FOP endorses Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just think about that for a while.
I wish it was the paternal order of police. And of was also included in the acronym. It was just poop.
The five best and worst states to vote in. Let's see. Yeah. None of our states, so.
Good. And for the record, there is also a Black Lives Matter movement up in Canada as well, because places like Toronto have also been having their issues with police misconduct. So this isn't solely an American problem.
No.
Yeah.
It's a human problem.
Yeah. So, moving on from that, Sony is going to be having their, is having their flash sale this month. Yeah, so, yeah. Let's see. Let's
take a look. This one's themed for deals under $10.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
bunch of arcade stuff. Mm-hmm. A bunch of the arcade archives. Karate Champ, Met Mania, Exciting Hour, Nova 2001, and Renegade. They're all a little over $3.
Yeah.
And for the same price, you can get the Namco arcade pack with Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man, Galaga, and Dig Dug for $3.19. Mm. So that's a pretty good price.
So let's see. On top of that, for under $10, we've also got Banner Saga 1, Child of Light.
Downwell.
Evolve.
That's Grid 2.
Yes, Defense Grid 2 for $5.99.
Hitman Go, $3.19.
Yeah. Killzone Shadowfall.
Cat Lateral Damage.
That one's got VR support now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I might have to grab that.
Lara Croft and the Temple of Osiris, for those of you, don't know, that's the
top down.
Yeah.
Yeah, the top down isometric shooter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Lich Dumb Battle Mage, Little Big Planet 3, Magicka 2, Motorcycle Club, Overlord Fellowship of Evil.
Just Push Me, Pull You, which is a creepy local multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Where you like a worm human person. Scary, even though it's not scary looking. Just creepy as hell.
Yeah. Rayman Legends. Seriously, if you haven't played that game by now, we just can't talk.
Yeah. And Shadow Complex Remastered for $6.
Sheltered.
The Last Blade 2.
Tetris. Last Blade 2. Order 1886, though, why you would want to play that, I'm not sure.
No, for under $10.
Or even shell out $7.99 for it.
Yeah, for $7.99, yeah, it's actually worth it.
All right.
So it's not as bad a game as people say it was.
Yeah, just
like Perfection kind Gorilla of short for changes. $5.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of Tails games.
Yeah. And of course, Valiant Hearts for $4.94, and that's all
for $5.
Yeah, that's pretty much all. That's all the PS4 stuff we mentioned, and obviously PS3 and
Tales of Graces F, Zillia 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think Hearts R is on sale as well.
Yeah, if you haven't played Tales of Zillia 1 and 2, they're both. Tales of Zillia is $4.99. Tales of Zillia 2 is, first of all, it's Exilia. That's how it's pronounced. And Exilia 2 is $7.49. So if you get a chance, go ahead and get those, because both of those games are definitely worth playing.
Yeah. I don't really trust the Japanese on how to pronounce an X. It's not their alphabet.
Racist. Okay, so...
Whoa, hang on a sec. Before we move on from that,
it's not racist. There's no X in their language.
Before we move on from that, somebody thinks they can get $10 for Duck Dynasty.
You know, you would
Trump
laugh.
Trump supporters, there's your game of the month.
Yep. You would laugh, but there are still people who would pay full price for that thing.
Funny thing is you can get that for cheaper clearance at Best Buy. I think it's like $8, $7 or $8, something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you still shouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just ignore it. It's
you can get the Drinkbox Vita collection for $10. That's Severed, Mutant Blobs Attack, and Guacamelee for $10.
Yeah, just spend $10.
That's real good.
That.
Yeah. Just let the Duck Dynasty people fade back into obscurity.
Yeah.
Please. La Milana EX for $6.
Yeah. So I'm gonna close that tab before I get angry. Or spend more money.
Yeah.
You want to rub women for $8 and not go to jail? There's Monster Monopiece. Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution 2 plus $8.
Good one for Vita.
Tearaway for $8.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so that's stuff we got. They got everything there for PS4, PS3, PSP.
And Vita.
You know, a bunch of stuff. So take a look at it. You'll more than likely find something.
Yep.
So, moving on. Got some more political news, but this is good stuff. So, in Alabama, the state Supreme Court was, until recently, headed by Chief Justice by the name of Roy Moore. Roy Moore, well, he's an asshole, for one thing. But he's a crazy Christian asshole. He is one of those people who is absolutely convinced that the First Amendment was only made for Christians, first of all. And keep in mind, this guy is the state Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Yeah.
I need to repeat that. Roy Moore, his first big claim to fame was him installing a giant statue of the Ten Commandments in front of the state of Alabama Supreme Courthouse.
Yeah, Alabama being a key part that makes a lot of sense. Yes.
So, as you can probably guess, that got him in a lot of trouble. So much trouble that it eventually got him suspended. And eventually fired. And then he ran again, and wouldn't you know it, he actually won his old seat back.
Yeah.
And then, as everybody knows, in 2014, gay marriage, same-sex marriage, became the law of the land throughout the entire United States.
Yeah.
And guess who didn't cotton to that idea?
Mr. Moore himself.
Yes. So you know what Mr. Moore did?
Mm-hmm.
He ordered all of his subordinates in the courts to ignore the ruling.
Yeah, because that's legal.
Yeah.
This is from
it's from the federal ruling. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So this is from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a great organization, by the way. They are one of the best resources on, you know, far right, neo-Nazi, fascist, and extremist violent groups that you'll find, anti-government groups that you'll find in the U.S. They basically are responsible for destroying both the original Knights of the Ku Klux Klan organization and the Aryan Nations, a.k.a. the Church of Jesus Christ Christian. So this is what they have to say. Okay. The Alabama Court of the Judiciary today suspended Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore for the rest of his term in office. The court ruled that Moore violated the canons of judicial ethics by ordering Alabama's probate judges to defy a federal court injunction requiring them to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples on a non-discriminatory basis. This is the second time in 13 years that Moore has been sanctioned as a result of ethics complaints filed by the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center also was the ones that filed the complaints about, you know, the statue that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Let's see. As they themselves released in a statement, the Court of the Judiciary has done the citizens of Alabama a great service by suspending Roy Moore from the bench. He disgraced his office and undermined the integrity of the judiciary by putting his personal religious beliefs above his sworn duty to uphold the U.S. Constitution. Moore was elected to be a judge, not a preacher. It's something that he never seems to understand. The people of Alabama who cherish the rule of law are not going to miss the Ayatollah of Alabama.
Ouch.
Oh, but it gets better. Because it was announced a couple of days ago that Acting Chief Justice Lynn Stewart sent two letters to Moore's Etowah County home in Gallant on Monday. So this was back in Monday. And basically it ordered him to go to the district attorney's office, turn over his office keys, and clean out his shit and go.
couldn't have happened to a nicer person.
Oh, yeah. If you ever get a chance, look into this guy, because he really is just a massive piece of shit. And I mean, he and narcissistic to a T. There is nothing worse than religious zealotry combined with self-centeredness. And he pretty much that's pretty much him.
Yeah.
To a T. Oh, he's also a Trump supporter.
Yeah, that should go without saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's getting so much better.
Yeah.
And yes, for those of you who are listening and are wondering, yes, we will be discussing next week the infamous grab 'em by the pussy incident. Because, yeah, that's probably the incident that finally killed his campaign.
Yeah.
And all the subsequent people stepping out saying, hey, he did that to me. And he ironically has a similar response that people would have had to him bringing up past of somebody that's not that irrelevant to his opposition.
Yeah.
He's basically going around to his rallies and saying that the people who claimed that he assaulted them, saying that they were too ugly for him to assault. And no, I'm not making that up.
Yeah.
Then there are comments of his about kids.
Oh, yeah.
It's like doesn't give a fuck anymore.
Nope.
You realize, oh yeah, he hasn't been a politician for the last 50 years, so he's done a lot of scummy shit that people are finally calling him out on.
Yeah.
Well,
three more weeks.
I am so fucking ready. Yes, just two more weeks, folks. It's almost over.
Yep.
Remember, it's not two more weeks. It's going to be like three more.
Two and a half.
Yeah, it's going to be on the 8th. Yeah, election's going to be on November
8th. Three and a half.
Yeah, 3.5 weeks.
So 3.5 weeks. It's almost over, folks.
Yeah.
Back to Hatsune Miku.
Just remember that the time between the final debate, which is going to be on Wednesday the 19th, and the time of the election is going to get especially heated. So prepare yourselves, folks. Also, and just for the record, if you see any, and I mean any, irregularities at your local polling places, do not hesitate to report them.
Yeah.
Because there has been talk from some Trump supporters saying they're going to, quote, volunteer as, quote, unquote, election supervisors.
They're just going to hang outside, watch the people going in.
Yeah. Sure, that's all it is.
So it's kind of incredible, a few weeks left, and one of the candidates has given up on trying to attract new people.
Yeah.
It's because he said, fuck it.
He seems to be actively trying to drive everybody away at this point.
Yeah, he's pretty much wants to keep Hillary people from going.
So, yeah, we'll talk a lot about that next week.
Yeah. So, moving on. Okay, we have got some movie trailers that we need to talk about. Most of them all nostalgic. Two of them are basically straight out of our childhood, and one of them is a new installment. Well, yeah, but Star Wars has been sort of part of everybody's childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, Legend of the Hidden Temple was not something I was really into, so this was kind of like, hey, this actually looks cool. I think I'll probably watch this.
Okay, so...
yeah, it's because I like because the non-Nickelodeon version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their kids' trailer is got silly narrator all over it.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Phil just spoiled it. The first trailer is the television movie version of the legendary children's game show, The Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Hmm.
And I ate that shit up when I was a kid.
Yeah, and Kirk Fogg.
And I'm gonna guess Chris did too.
Yeah. Yeah, Kirk Fogg, the original host is the tour guide.
Yeah.
That leads him to the mysterious temple.
Hmm.
Yeah. So and, I guess go
they
ahead.
They actually look like they had actual props from the old show in the trailer.
Yeah, somebody actually managed to fucking put together the Shrine of the Silver Monkey.
Yeah, that didn't look like they had like buttons and some of the other stuff in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we should probably get, if those of you who are listening who may have been too young, Legends of the Hidden Temple was one of a bunch of like kid-centered game shows that were everywhere in the 90s. Especially on Nickelodeon. But not just them. We're talking about stuff like Double Dare,
Guts.
What Would You Do, Guts, Figure It Out. There was also stuff like, Crystal Castles and
Nick Arcade. Stuff like
Nick Arcade. There was just a bunch of those shows were everywhere. Yeah.
Figure It Out.
And they were known for Wild and Crazy Kids. That was the outdoors one. Damn, I loved that one. They had a bunch of guest stars on that one too. It was a lot of fun. I remember I remember the one year they had a bunch of them show up during they used to back in the day. Nickelodeon used to do this thing called the Big Help, which they would do. It would be their one day where they would put all their programming encouraging kids to go out and do basically community service.
Yeah.
Picking up litter, cleaning up the neighborhood, stuff like that. And they put on a big music festival. And that one year was the one year that, for some strange reason, swing music became back in style. So suddenly you had Brian Setzer Orchestra and Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had, let's see.
I think it was around the year that the Mask came out.
Yeah, let's see. They have a list of guests here. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Lark Voorhees from Saved by the Bell.
Yep.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas from Home Improvement.
Of course.
Michael Fishman from Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
The young Tobey Maguire.
Yep.
Promoting the short-lived Fox sitcom Great Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Summers was on there. California Angels pitcher Scott Bales, if you want to see how old that is.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
California Angels, before they went to Anaheim, Los Angeles of Anaheim, or Anaheim of Los Angeles, I forget what the order was. Bruce Hurst of the San Diego Padres. Detroit Lions quarterback Rodney Peet. Michael Bauer, Venus De Milo, and Danny Cooksey from Salute Your Shorts.
Yeah.
And I guess they did a revival, so there's Bodie Miller. Two of the kids from Spy Kids.
Spy Kids.
Yeah.
So now you're doing a movie about this. Yay.
Yeah, so basically the whole thing with Legends of the Hidden Temple was, it was, if you watch the trailer, you'll see the big statue face Olmec. He was in the show, and basically he was the dude who would explain the rules of the game, and basically they started out with like a quiz, with like the quiz part of the show, and then the two teams that were able to do the quiz would then go on to the physical challenge stuff. Those who went into the physical challenge stuff would then go into the actual hidden temple itself.
Maybe they would get like bonuses, which, to help them.
Yeah, they would get the medallions, and the idea was, if you...
It was like wives.
Yeah.
They made the wrong choice, ran into bad guys.
A temple guard.
Medallion to get out of it.
Yeah, basically it was a giant carnival-style spook house, but with the front cut off so you could see inside of it.
Yeah.
And basically they go into different rooms, and in each room you had to do something to go further into the temple. Like I mentioned in the Shrine of the Silver Monkey, where you had to get the three pieces of the Silver Monkey statue, put them together, which for some reason nobody could fucking do.
shouldn't be that hard.
You know, you had to hunt around, but the one that always got me was the hidden forest, which was, you know, that one Mortal Kombat arena where there's the forest with the trees with all the faces on it?
Yeah.
So it was like that. The idea was that if you weren't careful, one of the trees was possessed by the ghost of a temple guard. And if you happen...
12 rooms in the whole temple.
Yeah. And they shifted, you know, particular rooms all the time. And the thing was that if you were, you know, the trees that in this forest, they had arms. And if you, and the idea was you had to reach into the mouths of the trees to get a key to unlock the door to go to the next room. But you had to be careful because one of them, again, was possessed by the ghost of a temple guard. And if you reached into the wrong tree,
yeah, you got stuck.
Well, you need an adult, basically. Of course, the temple guard is an adult, so that kind of defeats the whole purpose. Oh, yeah, and those temple guards were fucking terrifying, too, because they were usually hiding somewhere in the room and would just pop up and basically give you a fucking heart attack. I mean, I was just watching at home, and those things still scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so if you ever get a chance, watch some old episodes of it on, you know, if you can see, like, one on YouTube or whatever. Just remember that this was the 90s, so...
It's cheesy.
Yeah. It's cheesy as all hell, but we
actually
have
references
up
to the teams as well. Because there's a... Panther, I think, in there. And it's colored for one of the teams, whichever team that was, green.
Yeah.
Yeah, because all the teams were, like, an animal and a color.
Yeah.
So, oh, right, so that's one trailer down. Next trailer is yet another aspect of our childhood, and man, I bet Patrick wishes he was here with us now.
Probably. Yeah.
It's the trailer for the brand new movie starring the Power Rangers.
Yeah. This is, of the three trailers, this is the one I actually don't care about. Because I was never a fan, so it's not going to get me yet now that I'm a bit older.
Yeah, the thing is,
the trailer is a little origin story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, pretty much. Here's the thing. I was a Power Rangers fan when I was a kid, but once I grew up and, you know, realized, you know, the source of a lot of that shit, you know, that's part of the Sentai series from Japan, and actually got to watch the original for myself.
Yeah.
Power Rangers just doesn't hold it for me anymore.
No. Yeah, you know, when you have something that's translated, sometimes it loses something. So,
well, it's not just that; it's just that they completely redid the cast.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like what they did to the original Godzilla movie.
Hmm.
You know, where they just added in, you know, they redid the soundtrack and added in some random American reporter who was in Japan for some reason.
Yeah.
Granted, as anybody knows, back in the 90s, in the 80s in particular, that's kind of how, and the 70s for that matter, that's kind of how Japanese media was treated over here in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, if you thought that the way that, that, you know, Fox Kids destroyed One Piece and all those other anime was bad, well, be thankful you didn't grow up in the 90s like we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some actual big names attached to this movie.
Oh, yeah, like who?
Bryan Cranston, Zordon.
Mm. Yeah, well...
Yeah, well, Bryan Cranston at this point will do anything, so... Yeah.
Elizabeth Banks is Rita Repulsa. Bill Hader is Alpha 5. And so
Bill Hader, you mean Snake?
No, that's David.
Oh, David Hader.
Right. As in SNL's Bill Hader.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
And I guess they say Goldar is in this and the Putty Patrol.
Yeah. Fun. Yeah. All right. And then, finally, we got the new and probably final trailer.
Yeah, because it's coming out soon.
Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
If we're getting Star Wars movies every year that are looking this good, I'm down.
Yeah. I'm also down for the fact that, you know, it actually takes it out of the main series and gives us a good side story.
Yeah.
It's more grounded.
Yeah.
You know, it's not so...
We're going to find out about the Death Star plans in this one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, we're going to find out how the Death Star plans, how they got it, and then eventually how the, I guess, who was it again? And the ones they said in A New Hope who died, a lot of them died getting this information.
Bothans.
Yeah, the Bothans. How those plans ended up in the hands of the Bothans. Because the actual Bothans themselves and how they got the plans to the Rebel Alliance isn't going to be covered.
Yeah.
And it's going to be another interesting thing, like they're going to put things in here that don't show up again.
Yeah.
Like the prequels. Yeah. So it's like that cool looking robot.
Uh-huh.
It's like, where'd you guys go?
Mm-hmm.
Where's all this racial diversity at in the rebellion?
Yeah.
And I watched one of the old trailers, I think the first one they put out, and the black guy that's in The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's mostly shaved in the first trailer. So they added that afro in. Digitally, I'm guessing.
Oh, for fuck's sake, Disney. God
damn it.
We can't have a bald black man.
So,
but yeah, this.
Three good trailers to check out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this because, you know, the idea that you could, you know, taking Star Wars and focusing it on a more sort of grounded, more down to earth, for lack of a better term, type of story.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm hoping, you know, maybe we'll get, in future movies, we'll get something like their Republic Commandos or something like that.
Yeah. I think
you know, really down to the ground war focus type stuff.
Yeah. I think next year we're getting the Han Solo prequel young origin story type thing.
Yeah.
So that could be good.
Oh yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be nice to have a new Darth Vader.
So
at least like a Hayden Christensen one.
Yeah. So of the three trailers, the first one is interesting. Second one is so-so, and the third one is fucking awesome. So, yeah.
Go watch them.
Yeah, go watch them.
Yeah.
So, picking up from there, we got some science news. Scientists recently figured out that guess what? Dinosaurs? They probably didn't roar.
And they based this on research.
Yeah, they found fossils for a bird that's kind of a cross between a duck and a goose from 68 million years ago.
Hmm.
So yeah. Right on the edge of the end of the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And they figured out that this thing didn't really have the sort of, what do they call it? They just call it the squawk box. I think it's called like syrinx, something like that. The
esophagus or voice box or whatever you want to call it.
Syrinx. Yeah, syrinx. And that would have just basically let them do like a normal bird sound. So
yeah.
They mm-hmm. suspect that dinosaurs probably were not roaring.
Yeah.
No.
I think it was probably an implausible thing.
Yeah.
Or at least that the particular species wasn't.
And yeah. They suspect that it still might have made noises. They suspect it could have been something like the crocodiles. Where they have more of a low frequency sound. Oh, but they still...
Kind of a growl.
Yeah.
Which I have heard before and is fucking terrifying. I can...
It's like, okay, I'm just going to go the other way now.
Yeah. See, I've been to Florida, and it's not unusual. I've been to Florida. My mom and dad have some condos in Florida. I've got friends who live in Florida. And they'll tell you, it's not unusual to not necessarily unusual, but it's not unheard of to look out into your backyard and just randomly see an alligator out in the middle of it. They are everywhere down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess this is the first time they found a fossil of a syrinx in a Mesozoic bird.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of why it's leading to this whole thing.
Yeah.
By the way, those of you who are wondering, you know, if we're talking about dinosaurs, why are we talking about birds? Well, it's been pretty well the scientific consensus over the last couple of decades that dinosaurs are probably closer related to avians than reptiles.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're feathered.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, not all of them, but like, for example, the Utah raptor was most definitely had feathers.
Hmm.
And
now, there's the other type of raptors. Now, that's not the only kind of raptors. There were other raptors that were more than likely probably closer to what you would imagine from Jurassic Park.
Hmm.
It doesn't really matter, though, because they will all eat your face.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had the systemic kneecapping of everything we liked about Jurassic Park
over the last
20
much.
Years.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, the velociraptors, they're probably more like knee height.
Yeah.
So, you know, go fuck yourselves.
Then again, I don't care if it's just, it may be a knee height, but it's still a knee height massive. Of claws and teeth coming at you in packs.
Bird-like is what they suggest.
Yeah.
So. And when we say
that's
syrinx,
still pretty fucking terrifying to see coming running at you.
Yeah.
Like the T-Rex probably wasn't that big. Things like that.
Well, the T-Rex may not have been that big, but its average size was still pretty fucking big.
Well, technically, Tyrannosaurus rex didn't actually exist. But the thing that we think of as the T-Rex was not as big as is in Jurassic Park. Which is why it's cool that Jurassic World is like, fuck all that. We're just going to do what you think dinosaurs are.
We're just going to make this shit the way we want to.
We're just, because they make they actually justify that by saying, we took out that DNA. We just made it like what we want dinosaurs to be. An idealized version of dinosaurs.
Because nothing bad could happen there.
No, they just make a new one out of other DNA, and turns out it just goes fucking nuts and wants to eat everything.
Kills everything, yeah.
Because, of course, that didn't happen last time.
Yeah.
Then we just had the T-Rex from the first Jurassic Park just fight it and kill it. Because fuck yeah, dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's basically what that movie is. Is fuck yeah, dinosaurs.
Yep. So, oh well.
Well, so finally moving on to our last story for the night. some good news for all of us anime fans out there. Amazon recently picked up the rights to Studio Ghibli's first television series.
Ronnie of the Robbers.
Yep. And if you looked at it, well, it's pretty nice. Well, I mean, it's Studio Ghibli, because of course it's going to look good.
Yeah, they partnered with Polygon.
It's being the TV series, which is 26 episodes, is directed by Gorō Miyazaki, which is, as you don't know, that's Hayao Miyazaki's son.
Yeah.
He has had a little bit of trouble, you know, his work in animation has been developing because he's not really an animator by trade. Yeah. He's actually originally an architect. And basically, he just, for whatever reason, one year he got a wild hair up his ass, decided he wanted to follow in Daddy's footsteps. And so Studio Ghibli, of course, this is Japan we're talking about, where, you know, nepotism is kind of the norm.
Yeah.
So they said, fuck it, we'll let him have a project. And that project just happened to be Tales from Earthsea, which is okay.
Mm.
It's not good. It's not bad.
Yeah.
But it's good. But it's okay.
Can I say this is really cool of Amazon to be doing this kind of thing?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're kind of on a roll. I mean, they've had a few good hits already with their shows like Transparent. Was the other one? Yeah, Man in a High Castle, the Philip K. Dick adaptation was actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
What else they got? Well, they're doing the Grand Tour, and now they're doing this. It really, you know, seems like they're taking shots on stuff that, you know, people want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing is, they're complete, much like the same thing with Netflix, you know, they're completely outside of the traditional broadcast television system.
Yeah.
So they can basically ignore those rules and, you know, basically make their own.
Yeah.
Which may be one of the reasons why, you know, we are kind of sort of living in a new golden age of television here.
Yeah, we're living in a golden age of television, much of which doesn't actually appear on television.
Yeah. well, most of which avoids the normal television pathways. Because you can still watch all this shit on your television. It's just, granted, you have to have an internet connection as well.
Well, yeah.
But and route it to the TV, but still.
Hmm.
So, you know, that counts. I'm saying that counts.
Yeah.
But lucky it's my show, it counts.
It's not like broadcast television anymore. You
know, no, it's not broadcast television, which, by the way, is probably going to be dead within the next 10 years. So,
no doubt.
So, you know, get it while you can.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I hope with this will also, you know, will lead into maybe them getting the rights for some of Studio Ghibli's other television work, like Miyazaki's Future Boy Conan, which is a pretty legendary anime in the anime community that has never seen the light of day in the U.S.
Yeah.
Which is funny. I mean, it's a Miyazaki project, so you know, it's definitely got the talent behind it.
Yeah.
But it's just never made its way over here.
Yeah, some interesting info on the Wikipedia page for Gorō Miyazaki.
Go ahead.
For Tales from Earthsea.
Yeah.
The producer Toshio Suzuki decided Gorō should direct the film after seeing his storyboards, which apparently caused friction between him and his father, who felt he should not direct the film. So they didn't speak during the entire movie's development.
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, Hayao Miyazaki had been wanting to adapt Ursula K. Le Guin's work to film for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here was finally this project, and instead of him getting to headline it, it was his son.
I guess when they held the first preview, his father was there to attend it, and said he delivered his son to his message saying it was good. Mm. He enjoyed it, so sort of forgave him for that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know how to do this stuff. All right.
Yeah.
You're pretty okay.
For the record, Ursula K. Le Guin herself is kind of mixed about the film.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty common for the people that make the original sources.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roald Dahl wasn't exactly a fan of the movie.
Mm. Yeah, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
But everybody else likes it, so who cares about what he thinks?
Yeah.
So, with that, folks, I think it's time to wrap up this episode of Let's Weekend. I have, of course, been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Elogi, we want to say good night, get some sleep out there, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.